Leviticus 25, verse number 10 says, proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. Hello, this is Pastor Wynn Greer from the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church in Vilas, North Carolina. And I want to welcome you today to the Blessings of Liberty radio broadcast. This is a ministry of the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church. Before we get started, I want to take just a moment to invite you. We'd love for you to come visit with us in any or all of our services. We begin our Sunday morning worship service at 10 a.m. with Sunday school for all ages. And then at 11, we have our Sunday morning worship service, our preaching time. And then every Wednesday night at 7, we have our midweek prayer and Bible study. And second and fourth Sunday nights at 6, we have our Sunday night services. So we have several opportunities to come and worship the Lord with us, get involved in a Bible study. We also have a college ministry called Collegians for Christ. They meet every Tuesday night in the Plymouth Student Union in the Roan Mountain Room. And they meet about 7:15 if you are in the area and maybe a student and would be interested in something like that. You can check that out online at CFC Boone. My mind just went blank. Noah, what is it? CFC. He's looking it up. He's going to pull it up just to be safe. But Collegians for Christ, Brother Kyle and Sister Amanda Austin, they head up that ministry, and it's a great blessing.
It's CFCBoone.com.
Okay. My dots and comms and all that got mixed up. CFCBoone.com. All right. And then we have a church website, MountLebanonBC.org. I did remember that one, so I'm thankful for that. But it is good to be here today, and I want to appreciate Noah and all the help he gives and contributes to the radio broadcast. How are you today, Noah?
I'm good, and it's good to be here. We do want to say welcome to our listeners, those listening in right here on AM 1450 WATA out of Boone, North Carolina, those who listen in on AM 690 WZAP out of Bristol, Virginia, and those who listen in on 89.1 KPGT, The Truth, out of Watertown, South Dakota. We do appreciate our listeners.
It is good to be on the radio. We do appreciate the opportunity. And we hear from time to time from our listeners. That is always a blessing when somebody hears and communicates. And we talked to a couple of people last week that had heard different things on the radio broadcast and had a couple of calls. So we appreciate that. But it is good to be back once again today. And right now, the sun is shining and it's warm outside, and that just lifts our spirits. It's nice to have a little break from the winter weather. But we're going to continue on our series that we have been doing since the month of August, and it's called Heroes of Liberty. Today, we're going to actually look at the individual that actually got me to thinking about doing a series along these lines. I read an article about this individual last summer sometime. I don't remember exactly what day or anything like that, but I read an article about this person. I learned some things that I did not know before, and it just got me thinking about all the different people that have made contributions to liberty. Last week, we looked at Corrie Ten Boom. That's the first lady that we had looked at. And she hid Jewish people during World War II that were being hunted down by the Nazis. And just I love the story of her life and that little book, The Hiding Place. I highly recommend that. But today, the individual that we're going to look at, and I want to say this before I get started, and this is just a thought that I've had on my mind the past few days as I've been studying about this. I think that probably one of the worst things that could happen to any individual is for a political party to latch onto their story. Once that happens in the life of an individual, and whether doesn't matter who you're talking about, doesn't matter if it's the right or the left or Democrats or Republicans, but once a political party latches themselves onto somebody's life story, then from that point forward, it becomes all about that party and their agenda, and that becomes more prevalent than the actual truth of that person's story. And just by way of example, I read an article today in the opinion section of the Winston-Salem Journal, and actually it was from yesterday's newspaper, but it was talking about the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And it was from a pastor, an African-American, and I can't remember his name. His first name was Byron, I believe. But he was talking even how that the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. had been twisted and used for political purposes and what we're taught versus how it really was. And he was talking about that, and I thought that was interesting. But and another example we could give, Chris Kyle, the most popular movie right now in America is that movie American Sniper. And it's the life story of Chris Kyle, and I've actually talked about him here on the radio broadcast before. Several times we've mentioned different instances about him and things about his life, but I noticed that that is being politicized. And, you know, that discredits somebody's life story and their contribution. But just wanted to throw that out there before I got started, because I'm sure same way about this individual. Now, who I'm talking about, I want to talk today about Miss Rosa Parks. Miss Rosa Parks. Most people who know anything about American history know that Rosa Parks is associated with the civil rights movement. And I was reading the newspaper yesterday, and it was talking about Martin Luther King Day, and it gave a timeline of events in his life, and the first date that it gave was December the 1st, 1955, and it talked about Rosa Parks. Now, you probably know, not all of our listeners will know this, but I would say that most would, or at least should. But on December the 1st, 1955, Miss Rosa Parks had boarded a bus, a public bus, in Montgomery, Alabama. She had been working all day and as a seamstress in a local department store. And in those days in America, things were much different than they are today. For example, if you got on a bus that had two doors, then you would have to get on the front of the bus if you were black. This is what you'd have to do. And you'd have to get on the front of the bus. You'd have to pay your 10 cents. That's what she paid to get on the bus on that day. You'd have to then turn around and get back off the bus, and you'd have to go to the back of the bus and get in the back door, the middle door, and a lot of buses still have two doors on them, and you'd have to enter the bus that way after you had paid. Can you imagine living your life having to live that way? Well, that's how Rosa Parks, that's what she did on that day, December the 1st, 1955. She got on the bus. She paid her 10 cents. She exited the bus, went to the back door, got on, and she sat in the first row of seats reserved for blacks, or at that time, a lot of times these signs would say colored section or colored people, and so that's where she sat. She sat on the first row that was reserved for the colored people. And as the bus moved on its route, it began to fill up, and the more and more seats were taken up. Eventually, all the seats for white people were taken up. And so another white person got on the bus, and the bus driver turned around and he looked back at the row that Miss Rosa Parks was sitting on. And she said, and he said something to this effect, and I read it, I didn't bring it with me, but he said, "You colored folks are going to have to give up your seat. You know, get up and move to the back so these white people can have a seat and so they can sit down." Well, Miss Rosa Parks didn't move. She didn't get up. And at first, the others did not get up. And he said something like, "You're going to make this hard on you. You're going to make this hard on you." Well, the others all got up and moved. Miss Rosa Parks, she continued to sit there in that seat. She politely but calmly refused to move. Well, what happened was the bus driver called the police. The police came within 5 minutes. She was arrested, taken off the bus, taken down to the jail. She stayed in jail. She said that she was released later on that evening, so she wasn't in jail an extended period of time, just a matter of hours. But she was released, and she had to go back to court. She was fined $14 for disobeying the law. The next day, though, she lost her job as a seamstress in the department store that she was working in. But if you know anything about the history of the civil rights movement in America, this one incident is credited as sparking the civil rights movement. Now, what it resulted in, what happened as a result of this, is that the people there in Alabama, and there was white people and black people involved in this boycott. And many times, and this is according to Miss Rosa Parks' own autobiography that she wrote, but at the end of it, she talked about both white and black people standing together on this issue. But what they did as a result of this was that they called a boycott, and it was a peaceful protest. They wanted it from the beginning. Now, I don't know that it was that there was no violence whatsoever, but it was designed to be a peaceful protest. And what they did, they boycotted the bus system. And she talks about how that there were churches that were involved in giving people rides to work, and different individuals would give people rides, and some people had to walk for miles to work. Some people lost their jobs because they couldn't work, but they boycotted the public transportation system there in Montgomery, Alabama. It lasted for a little over a year. It lasted for 381 days until the Supreme Court decided or ruled that it was unconstitutional for blacks to have to give up their seats to whites. And so that marked the end of segregation in America. It was a great victory for the civil rights movement. Now, I sort of told the background there. I want to say this about what she did. Now, when she did that, when she refused to get up and move, and if you read about her life story, she didn't hate white people or anything like that. She recognized, just like most of us recognize today, that there are good white people. There's bad white people. There's good black, you know, that people are individuals. She realized that. She talked about different white people that had been good to her, that had treated her just like anybody else, and she appreciated that. So it's not like she was, she said in her own words, she didn't do that to start a boycott. But what she did on December the 1st, 1955, she did break the law. It was a law at that time that black people and white people were to be segregated, and that there was a section of the bus for black people and a section for white people. That wasn't the only way that they were segregated. Schools were segregated. There were white schools and colored schools. Water fountains. If you're a white person, you had a water fountain that you could drink out of. If you were a black person, you couldn't drink out of the same water fountain as the white people did. They had their own water fountains. Many businesses had doors that white people went in, and if you were black, you had to go in another door. And even at that time, or along in that time period, there was a white baseball league. There was a Negro, that's what they called it, baseball league. And so they were even separated in their sports that they played. A very different time in America. So according to the law, she broke the law. But what I want to say is this about that. It was an unjust law. And many, many times here on the Blessings of Liberty, we have talked about the difference between a good law and an unjust law, and how a Christian is to respond according to the Bible to an unjust law. The law that a black person had to get up and give their seat to a white person on a public transportation system was without a doubt an unjust law. And the great majority of people today would recognize that and say, that is right. Amen. That's not right that that ever took place in America. So when she did that, she broke an unjust law. Now, what you may not know about Miss Rosa Parks is that she was raised in a Christian home. Her father left when she was very young, so her mother and her grandparents helped raise her. But according to her own testimony and others that have written about her, she carried her Bible everywhere that she went. She was a lifelong member of the AME Church, which is an African Methodist Episcopalian church. And she was a lifelong member of that church, very dedicated and involved all the days of her life. But she really talks about the impact that the Bible and the hymns and church had on her as she was growing up. She not only went to church as a young girl, but in her home, the Bible was read every day. She talks about going to school as a little girl and the white children, boys, picking on her and shoving her, you know, as she walked down the street and things like that. And she talked about, you know, how come the white children, they went to this immaculately manicured school and the lawn was just perfect and the building was quite large. And she had heard rumors that inside that school that there were just shelves upon shelves that were full of books, and how that she would love to have went over and just looked in the window and seen if that was true, that the shelves were full of books. But she said she dared not do that. And then she talks about going on down the road to their school, the school for the colored children, and how they had no books. But the one book that they did have, they had the Bible. So the Bible was very influential in her life growing up at home, at school, and then later on in her life. And she talks about her loving the Lord and trusting in Him, and how that even God had used a bus ride to change a law here in America, or to change the laws and make a difference for future generations. So Miss Rosa Parks was a Christian lady. Her act of civil disobedience was actually rooted in her Christian faith. She wrote in her biography about what happened on the bus. And there's a couple of books that she helped author. One was called My Story, and the other one is called Quiet Strength. But in her biography, My Story, she said this: from my upbringing and the Bible, I learned people should stand up for rights just as the children of Israel stood up to Pharaoh. She talks about in that book when she was a little girl and living in the home that they lived in. At that time, the KKK in America was growing the numbers, and how they there in Alabama that the men would in their hooded bed sheets, whatever they called them, robes, you know, they'd march up and down the street that she lived on. It was a very terrifying time. And how that her grandfather slept in a rocking chair by the front with a shotgun to protect his property. Now, he believed in the Bible. He's not a violent person, but he said he had a God-given right to protect his family, to protect his property. And so he did. It never came to that. But that is that's the world that she grew up in. And so she said, from my upbringing in the Bible, I learned people should stand up for rights just as the children of Israel stood up to Pharaoh. When she was growing up, she was very good at memorizing Bible verses. And that was a big part of their Sunday school and going to church. One of those Bible verses she talks about, Matthew chapter 5, verse 39, "But whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also." She talked about learning what it meant firsthand in America to turn the other cheek when somebody would do you wrong. Her mother would tell her on the way to school, she'd say, "Now you remember, Rosa, no matter what those other children do to you, you turn and walk away." She said she remembered telling her mother that's not fair, that these children would be able to pick on us, and you can't say anything or do anything. Her mother would say, Mama would just tell me to turn the other cheek like Jesus said to in the Bible. So she was taught on one hand to turn the other cheek, but she was also taught from the Bible that in God's eyes we are all equal, that we were all created in His image, Genesis chapter 1, verse number 27, that God had created mankind, all of mankind, in His image, and that made us all equal in the eyes of God. I found a very interesting article that was written in 1999 by Chuck Colson, or Charles Colson, and he's a Christian author. Some of you may have heard of him or read some of his books and things in the past, but this was written in 1999, and he talks about Rosa Parks and her Christian faith, and I learned some things I did not know before. He said this: Parks wasn't the first black person to refuse to move to the back of the bus. He said earlier that year, a woman had been carried off the bus clawing and kicking. Another woman had used profanity during her arrest, but the local NAACP declined to rally behind these women. But Parks' behavior throughout her arrest was above reproach. Because of this, and because of her well-known exemplary character, Alabama civil rights leaders thought Parks' arrest signaled the right time to act. They launched the famous year-long Montgomery bus boycott, and the rest is history. The story of Rosa Parks is a reminder of what a central role Christian faith has played in the civil rights movement. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was a Christian minister who turned the other cheek in the face of violence. And Jackie Robinson's Christian faith was what led Branch Rickey, another devout Christian, to choose him as the man to break the color barrier in baseball. When you hear that familiar refrain that Christians are bigots, remind your taunters who was behind the great civil rights advances of this generation, Christians. And I thought that was a great little article in him talking about. Now, I'll just say this about Jackie Robinson. Now, anybody that knows me, you know I'm a big baseball fan, and I grew up loving baseball and interested in all things baseball. I was watching a documentary a while back on baseball, and it was talking about the history of baseball. Now, this was not a Christian channel or anything like that, but it had a segment about Jackie Robinson and Branch Rickey. Branch Rickey on the Dodgers, and he was a devout Christian. He wanted to bring the, what they said at that time, the colored players into baseball. I started to say Major League Baseball, but into the Dodgers organization. There was a great many talented colored baseball players, but Branch Rickey knew that it would take a special player to be the first player. And when he learned about Jackie Robinson, and he interviewed Jackie Robinson, and it talked about how that he took Jackie Robinson into his office and spent hours talking to him. And he said, now, Jackie Robinson, you're going to be cursed. You're going to be spiked by the other players. This is going to be the hardest thing that you've ever done in your life. And above all things, you cannot fight back. You can't say anything back. It's not just about you, but it's about all the other players that would come along and play. And he was looking for that special one that he could trust, that could come along, somebody of exemplary character. And so Jackie Robinson became the first black baseball player in the major leagues. It's an interesting story, but it's even more interesting to me that two Christians conspired together to make this thing happen for the good of everybody. And so it was with Rosa Parks. They had to find the right person that they could support and get behind. And it was Miss Parks and her Christian upbringing and her exemplary character and her humbleness. When she was told to move, she politely did. She refused to give up her seat. And when the bus driver said, "I'm going to call the police and you'll be arrested," she said, "You may do that." And so she didn't call. But God used her, as well as these others that we have mentioned. So it's very, very interesting. And a lot of times Christians get a bad name as being bigoted, but they played a major part in the formation of this country the way it is today. Now, I was talking with my mom a while back, and I just asked her, you know, and I would encourage everybody, talk to your parents, talk to your grandparents, learn some things about how it used to be and before you came along. And I was talking to my mom, and I said, well, what about growing up in the late 50s, the early 60s? How was that? How were you raised? How did this is a time of great turmoil. There was a time of riots and racial tensions and all of these things. And she was telling me about some of you may even know this. My grandfather, Clyde Cornett, he was a Baptist pastor. And she said, well, growing up, Papa, that's what we always called him, he taught us to always respect everybody, no matter what the color of their skin is, that you didn't disrespect people. You didn't talk bad about them. It didn't matter if they're white or black or whatever they are. And so I appreciate that so much. They were taught never to disrespect anybody else, no matter the color of their skin. I was raised the same way. I think about, you know, if you were raised in the 60s or 50s or 40s, whatever, how could you sing the song "Jesus Loves Little Children, All the Children of the World, Red and Yellow, Black and White, They Are Precious in His Sight," and then go down to the store and find that, or get on the bus and find that, you know, we think we're better than these people, or these people think they're better? What a hypocritical way to live one's life. I actually cannot imagine growing up like that. I didn't grow up like that. I grew up in the 70s, and I don't know anything about segregated schools. I've never seen a separate water fountain for white people and black people. I've never seen different doors. I've never seen that with my eyes, and I'm thankful that I cannot imagine what that would be like. Can you imagine if you went down to the store this afternoon and there's a water fountain for black people and white people, and if you're one or the other and you got in the wrong water fountain, you'd actually get arrested or getting on the bus and there being a set. I can't imagine that. That would be, as a white person, that would be embarrassing. As a black person, I can only imagine that would be humiliating to have to live one's life like that. So I'm thankful for those that have stood against unjust laws, no matter the color of their skin. One of Miss Park's favorite Bible verses is actually one of my favorite Bible verses, Acts chapter 5, verse 29, where the Bible simply says, Peter said this, "We ought to obey God rather than men. In his eyes, we're all equal." I'm thankful for the truths of the Word of God. They'll enlighten you. They'll lift you up. They'll lift society up. Well, our time is quickly come and gone. We appreciate you listening in today. Hope you have a great day, and God bless you is our prayer. Noah's going to come and give the contact information.
You've been listening to Blessings of Liberty, brought to you by Pastor Wing Greer of the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church. It's located in Vilas, North Carolina. If you'd like to contact us, our church phone number is 828-963-4596. That's 828-963-4596, or you can reach us through our church website at mountlebanonbc.org. That's mtlebanonbc.org.